This is Audible.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away. Listening Library presents Journey to Star Wars, Lost Stars, by Claudia Gray. Read for you by Pierce Cravens. Years after the fall of the Old Republic, the Galactic Empire now reigns over the known galaxy. Resistance to the Empire has been all but silenced. Only a few courageous leaders, such as Bail Organa of Alderaan, still dare to openly oppose Emperor Palpatine. After years of defiance, the many worlds at the edge of the Outer Rim have surrendered. With each planet's conquest, the Empire's might grows even stronger. The latest to fall under the Emperor's control is the isolated mountain planet Jellocan, whose citizens hope for a more prosperous future, even as the Imperial Starfleet gathers overhead. Prologue. A ship sliced through the shale gray sky overhead, so quickly it was no more than a line of light and a distant screech, almost lost in the wind.
"That's a Lambda-class shuttle!"
Thane Kyrell pointed upward, jumping with excitement.
"Did you hear it? Did you, Dalvin?"
His older brother cuffed him and sneered.
"You don't know what the ships look like. You're too little to know." "Am not! It was a Lambda-class shuttle. You can tell by the sound of the engines."
"Children, hush." Thane's mother never glanced back at them. She concentrated on holding up the hem of her saffron-colored robe so it wouldn't trail in the dust.
"I told you we ought to have brought the hovercraft. Instead, we're wandering down to Valentia on foot like valley trash."
"The hangars will be a madhouse," insisted Thane's father, Oris Kyrell, with a contemptuous sniff. "Thousands of people trying to land, whether or not they've got a reservation. Do you want to spend a whole day fighting over docking rights? Better to do it this way. The boys can keep up well enough."
Dalvin could. He was 12 years old, long-limbed and proud to tower over his younger brother. For Thane, the downhill trek through the uneven mountain paths was harder going. So far, he was shorter than most boys his age. The large feet and hands that hinted at his future height were, for now, merely awkward. His reddish-blonde hair stuck to his sweaty forehead, and he wished his parents had let him wear his favorite boots instead of these shiny new ones, which pinched his toes at every step. But he would have made a more difficult trip than that to finally see TIE fighters and shuttles, real spacecraft, not like some clunky old V-171.
"It was a Lambda-class shuttle,"
he muttered, hoping Dalvin wouldn't overhear. But he did. His older brother stiffened, and Thane prepared himself. Dalvin never hit him very hard when their parents were nearby, but those lesser shoves or punches were often a warning of worse to come later. This time, however, Dalvin did nothing. Maybe he was distracted by the promise of the spectacle they would see that day, the display of flying power and flying techniques by vessels of the Imperial fleet. Or maybe Dalvin was embarrassed because he'd realized Thane had identified the ship when he couldn't. "He says he's going to the Imperial Academy," Thane thought. "But that's just because he thinks it will make him important. Dalvin doesn't know every single ship like I do. He doesn't study the manuals or practice with a glider. Dalvin will never be a real pilot. But I will."
"We should have left Thane at home with the housekeeper droid."
Dalvin's voice had become sulky. "He's too little for any of this. In another hour, he'll be whining to go home."
"I won't," Thane insisted. "I'm old enough, aren't I, Mama?"
Janair Kyrell nodded absently. Of course you're old enough. You were born in the same year as the Empire itself, Thane. Never forget that. How could he forget when she'd reminded him at least 5 times already that day? He wanted to say so, but that would only earn him another cuff from Dalvin. Or worse, a new barrage of insults from his father, whose words could cut deeper than any blade. Already he could sense them staring at him, waiting for any show of defiance or weakness. Thane turned as if he were looking down toward their destination, the city of Valentia, so neither his father nor Dalvin would see his expression. It was always better when they didn't know what Thane was thinking. He wasn't worried about his mother. She rarely noticed him at all. The wind tugged at his blue and gold embroidered cloak, and Thane shivered. Other worlds had to be warmer, brighter, busier, more fun in every way. He believed this despite never having visited another planet in his life. It was impossible to think that the vastness of the galaxy didn't contain some place better to be than here. Jellocan had been settled late in galactic history, probably because nobody else had been desperate enough to want a nearly uninhabitable rock at the very edge of the Outer Rim. Nearly 500 years before, an initial group of settlers had been exiled here from another world equally obscure. They'd fought on the wrong side of some civil war or other. Thane didn't know the details. His parents had told him only that those first settlers had gotten themselves mired in the valleys, in nearly total poverty, and had barely been able to keep themselves alive. True civilization had only come later, 150 years ago, with the second wave of settlers, who had come here voluntarily in hopes of building their fortunes. They'd managed to establish mining, engage with galactic commerce, and lead modern lives, unlike the people from the valleys, who behaved more like pre-technological nomads than modern people. Of course, they were Jellucani, too, but they were unfriendly, isolated, and proud. Or maybe it was only that the Valley Kindred were still mad about being dumped on this icy, rugged rock of a world. If so, Thane didn't blame them. A pity the Emperor himself won't be able to attend, his mother said. Wouldn't it have been something to see him for ourselves? Like the Emperor would ever come here. Thane knew better than to say that out loud. Everyone was supposed to love Emperor Palpatine. Everyone said he was the bravest, most intelligent person in the galaxy. That he was the one who had brought order after the chaos of the Clone Wars. Thane wondered if that was all true. Certainly, Palpatine had made the Empire strong, and made himself the most powerful man within it. Thane didn't really care if the Emperor was nice or not. The Empire's coming was a good thing, because it brought its ships with it. All he wanted was to see those ships, then later to learn to fly them. And finally to fly far away from here, never to return. Sienna, your eyes on the path or you'll fall. Sienna Ree couldn't stop staring into the gray sky. She could have sworn she'd heard a Lambda-class shuttle, and she wanted more than anything to see one, too. But Mama, I know I heard a ship. It's always ships and flying with you. Her mother, Vereen, chuckled softly and picked up her daughter, then placed her on the wide, furry back of the Munyak they were leading uphill toward Valentia. There, save your strength for the big parade. Sienna buried her hands in the Munyak's shaggy hair. It smelled agreeably of musk and hay, of home. As she peered upward, she saw a thin line in the clouds, already disappearing, but evidence that the shuttle had been there. She shivered with excitement, then remembered to take hold of the braided leather bracelet around her wrist. Pressing the leather between her fingers, Sienna whispered, "Look through my eyes." Now her sister Wynette could see it too. Sienna lived her life for them both and never forgot that. Her father must have heard her because he wore the sad smile that meant he was thinking of Wynette too. But he only patted his daughter's head and tucked one wayward black curl behind her ear. Finally, after 2 hours' trek upward, they reached Valentia. Sienna had never seen a real city before, except in Hollows. Her parents rarely left their home valley, and certainly had never taken her with them when they did, until today. Her eyes widened as she took in the buildings carved into the pale white stone of the cliffs, some of them 10 or 15 stories high. They stretched along the side of the mountain as far as Sienna could see. All around the carved dwellings stood tents and awnings, dyed in a dozen brilliant colors and draped with fringe or beads. Imperial flags fluttered from poles newly jabbed into the ground or mounted in stone. Thronging the streets were more people than she'd ever seen together in her 8 years. Some were hawking food or souvenirs for the great occasion. Imperial banners or small hollows of the Emperor smiling benevolently, translucently, above a small iridescent disc. Most, however, walked along the same crowded roads as she and her family, all headed toward the ceremony. Even a few droids rolled, hovered, or shuffled through the crowd, each of them shinier and obviously far more modern than the one battered cutter droid in her village. Those people and droids would have been far more fascinating if they hadn't all been in her way. "Are we going to be late?" Sienna said. "I don't want to miss the ships." "We won't be late," her mother sighed. She'd said so many times that day, and Sienna knew she needed to be quiet. But then, Vereen Rhee put her hands on her young daughter's shoulder, as soft as the gesture was, the Muniac knew to stop walking forward. Mama's faded black cloak blew around her too thin body as she said, "I know you're excited, my heart. This is the biggest day of your life so far. Why shouldn't you be thrilled? But have faith. The Empire will be waiting for us when we finish traveling up the mountain, whatever that may be. All right?" Mama's smile could make Sienna feel like she'd stepped into a patch of sunshine.
"All right."
It didn't matter when they finished climbing. The Empire would always, always be waiting for her. As Mama had promised, they reached the paddock in plenty of time. But as her parents were paying for a day's corralling and feed, Sienna heard the laughter.
"They rode that filthy Muniac to the Imperial ceremony," yelled a teenage second-wave boy.
The livid red of his cloak reminded Sienna of an open sore.
"They're going to stink up the entire place."
Sienna felt her cheeks flush warm, but she refused to look at the kids taunting her any longer. Instead, she patted the Muniac's side. It blinked at her, patient as ever.
"We'll come back for you later," she promised.
"Don't be lonely." No taunts from some stupid big kids could make her ashamed of the beast. She loved it and its smell. Stupid second wavers didn't understand what it meant to be close to your animals or to the land. Yet now that she saw hundreds of second wave folk in their long silken cloaks and richly quilted clothing, Sienna looked down at her light brown dress and felt shabby. Always before, she had liked this dress because the fabric was only slightly paler than her skin, and she liked that they matched. Now she noticed the ragged hem and loose threads at the sleeves.
"Don't let them affect you."
Her father's face had become tense, pinched.
"Their day is over and they know it."
"Perrin,"
whispered Sienna's mother as she clutched her husband's arm.
"Keep your voice down."
He continued with more discretion, but even greater pride.
"The Empire respects hard work, absolute loyalty. Their values are like ours. Those second-wave folk, they don't think about anything but lining their own pockets."
That meant making money. Sienna knew this because her father said it often, always about the second-wavers who lived in the highest mountains. She didn't see what was so bad about making money, really. But other things were more important, especially honor. Sienna and every other resident of the Jellocan Valleys were descended from loyalists cast out of their homeworld after the overthrow of their king. One and all, their people had chosen exile rather than betray their allegiance to their leader. Hard as life on Jellocan was, unceasing as their labor and poverty had been ever since, the people of the valleys still took pride in their ancestors' choice. Like every other child in her village, Sienna had been raised knowing that her word was her bond, and her honor the only possession that could ever truly matter. Let the second wavers strut around in their new coats and shiny jewelry. Sienna's plain cloak had been woven by her mother, the wool spun from their Munyak's fur. Her leather bracelet was re-braided and expanded as she grew so it would remain on her wrist her entire life. She owned little, but everything she had, everything she did, contained meaning and value. People from the mountains couldn't understand that. As if he could read his daughter's thoughts, Perrin re-continued. We'll have different opportunities now, better ones. We've already seen that, haven't we? Sienna's mother smiled as she wrapped her pale gray scarf more tightly around her hair. Just 3 days before, she'd been offered a supervisory position at the nearby mine, the kind of authority the second wavers tended to save for their own. But the Empire was in charge now. Everything would change. You'll have more choices, Sienna. You have the chance to do more, to be more. Perrin Rhee smiled down at his daughter with stern but unmistakable pride. The Force is guiding this. So far as Sienna could tell from the few hollows she'd ever been able to watch, most people in the galaxy no longer believed in the Force, the energy that allowed people to become one with the universe. Even she sometimes wondered whether there could ever have been such a thing as a Jedi Knight. The amazing tales the elders told of valiant heroes with lightsabers who could bend minds, levitate objects. Surely those were only stories. But the Force had to be real, because it brought the Empire to Jellucan to change all their futures forever.
People of Jellucan, today represents both an ending and a beginning,
said the senior Imperial official at the celebration, a man called Grand Moff Tarkin. Sienna knew that was his title and his name, but she was unsure whether his title was Grand Moff and his name Tarkin, or whether his name was Moff Tarkin, and he was very grand indeed. She'd ask later when no second wavers were around to mock her for not knowing. Tarkin continued,
On this day ends your isolation from the greater galaxy. Instead, Jellucan begins a new glorious future by assuming its rightful place within the Empire.
Applause and cheers filled the air, and Sienna clapped along with all the rest, but her sharp eyes picked out a few people who remained silent, elders mostly, who would have been alive since before the Clone Wars. They stood there, still and grave, more like mourners at a funeral or witnesses to public dishonor. One silver-haired, pale-skinned woman bowed her head, and a tear ran down her cheek. Sienna wondered if perhaps she'd had a son or daughter who died in the wars, and seeing all these soldiers had reminded her of the loss and made her sad on such a happy day. Because there were so many soldiers, officers in crisp black or gray uniforms and stormtroopers in gleaming white armor, and there seemed to be nearly as many ships as troops, hard-cornered TIE fighters black as obsidian, assault cruisers the same gray as mountain granite, and high above in orbit, twinkling like the South Star at morning, a few specks that she knew were actually Star Destroyers. Each and every Star Destroyer was bigger than the entire city of Valencia, they said, two or three times over. Just the thought of it made Sienna's heart swell with pride. Now she had become part of the Empire. Not only her planet, but she herself, too. The Empire governed the whole galaxy. The Imperial fleet's power exceeded that of any other fighting force in all of history. Seeing the ships fly overhead in precise formation, never deviating from their prescribed paths, thrilled her to the bone. This was strength, grandeur, majesty. This was the kind of honor and discipline she'd been raised to value, but taken to heights of which she never dreamed. Nothing could be more beautiful than this, she thought. Unless someday she could actually fly one of those ships herself. Grand Moff Tarkin kept speaking, saying something about separatist worlds that made everybody seem uncomfortable for a moment. But then he went back to how great the Empire was and how proud everyone had to be. Sayana cheered when the others did, but by then she was wholly focused on the nearest ship, a shuttle just like the one she thought she'd seen in the sky. If only she could get a closer look. Maybe after the ceremony, she could. When the speeches and music ended, the Kyrells had a private reception to attend with very important officials, and they told Dalvin to keep an eye on Thane. As they said the words, Thane silently estimated how long it would be before Dalvin ditched him to go hang out with friends. 5 minutes, he thought. 5 or 6. For once, he'd overestimated Dalvin, who abandoned his little brother after only 3 minutes. But Thane could take care of himself. More important, he could get a lot closer to the Imperial hangar on his own. Although most of the Imperial ships had already zoomed back to their Star Destroyers or to one of the new facilities being built on the southern plateaus, a few remained in the Imperial hangar. The nearest was a Lambda-class shuttle, just like the one Thane was certain he'd seen in the sky earlier. Sure, the signs said to stay back, but sometimes people assumed little kids couldn't read signs. Thane figured he was still young enough to get away with that excuse if anybody caught him. All he wanted to do was look at the ship up close. Maybe touch it just once. So he crept around to the back of the raised stage erected for the day's speeches, then ducked under it. Although Thane had to keep his head low, he could run beneath it all the way to the hangar itself. When he emerged, he smiled with pride, then saw to his disappointment that he wasn't the only one who'd had that idea. Several other kids he knew from his school had gathered nearby too, slightly older boys, ones he'd never liked. And one other, a skinny girl, dressed in shabby clothes that marked her as someone from the valleys. Next to the brilliant crimson and gold of the boys' robes, her brown dress reminded Thane of an autumn leaf about to fall. "What are you doing here, Valley scum?" said Mothar Drick, the grin on his broad face nastier than usual. The awestruck smile faded from the girl's face as she looked from the shuttlecraft toward her new tormentors. "I just wanted to see the ship, same as you." Mothar made an obscene gesture. "Go back to your sty and slop out the dung. That's where you belong." The girl didn't budge. Instead, she balled her hands into fists. "If I were slopping out dung, I'd have to start with you." Thane laughed out loud. A few of the other boys saw him then. One of them said, "Hey Thane, gonna help take out the trash?" They meant that they were going to beat up the girl from the valleys. 6 of them, 1 of her. Those were the kind of odds that only appealed to a bully. Growing up with Oris Kyrell as a father had taught Thane many things. It had taught him how strictly and harshly rules could be enforced, taught him that his brother responded to their father's cruelty by being equally cruel to Thane, if not worse, taught him that it didn't matter who was really right or wrong, because the rules were set by whoever held the cane. Above all, it had taught him to hate bullies. "Yeah," Thane said. "I'll take out the trash." With that, he charged straight at Mothar. The idiot never saw it coming. His breath went out in a woof of surprise as he landed on his back hard. Thane got in a couple of punches before someone towed him off Mothar. And when he saw another of the boys reaching for his collar, he prepared for the inevitable fist to the face. But the skinny girl flung herself onto his attacker, pulling the boy's arm back. "You let him go!" she yelled. 2 against 6 still wasn't great odds, but the girl fought hard. Thane knew he did too, mostly because, thanks to Dalvin, he'd already learned how to take a hit and keep going. Still, the two of them were getting herded toward a corner. Thane already had a bloody lip, and this wasn't going to end well.
"What's going on here?"
Everyone froze. Only 5 meters away stood Grand Moff Tarkin, surrounded by Imperial officers and white armored stormtroopers. At the sight of them, Mothar fled, his toadies at his heels. That left Thane and the girl standing there alone.
"Well?"
Tarkin said, strolling closer. His face could have been etched in a quartz crystal with its hard, pale lines. The girl stepped forward.
"It's my fault," she said. "The other boys were going to beat me up, and he tried to stop them."
"Very silly of you," Tarkin said to Thane.
He seemed amused.
"To fling yourself into a fight you would have lost. Never go up against superior forces, lad. It doesn't end well."
Thane thought fast.
"It did today because of you."
Tarkin chuckled.
"You realized an even stronger force would be along shortly, then. Excellent strategic thinking. Well done, my boy."
They were off the hook now, but the girl from the valleys didn't seem to know it.
"I wasn't supposed to be in the hangar," she said, head bowed. "I broke a rule, but I didn't mean to do anything dishonorable. I only wanted to see the ships."
"Of course you did," Tarkin said, leaning down a bit closer to them. "That tells me you're curious about the galaxy beyond Jellucan. And you two stayed when the other children ran. That tells me you're brave. Now I want to see if you're intelligent. What kind of ship do we have here?"
"A Lambda class shuttle," they said in unison, then looked at each other.
Slowly the girl began to smile, and Thane did too.
"Very good." Tarkin held out one hand toward the ship. "Would you like to look inside?"
Did he mean it? He did.
Thane could hardly believe his luck as one of the stormtroopers opened the hatch for them. He and the girl ran inside where everything was black and shiny and lit up with 100 small lights. They were shown into the cockpit and even got to sit in the pilot seats. Grand Moff Tarkin stood just behind, rigid as a flagpole, his boots gleaming as brightly as the polished metal surrounding them.
"Show me the altitude control," he said.
They both pointed to it instantly.
"Excellent. And the docking guide? You know that one as well?" "Yes, you're both very bright. What are your names?"
"I'm Thane Kyrell."
He wondered if Grand Moff Tarkin would recognize his last name. His parents insisted that the Imperial authorities would know them well. But Tarkin's face remained only vaguely curious. The little girl said,
"I'm Sienna Ree, sir."
"Sir." He should have thought to call Tarkin sir, too. At least Tarkin didn't seem to mind.
"Wouldn't you like to serve the Emperor someday and fly ships like these? Then you might become Captain Kyrell and Captain Ree. What would you think of that?"
Thane's chest swelled with pride.
"That would be the best thing ever! Sir!"
Tarkin laughed softly as he turned to one of the junior officers standing just behind him.
"You see, Piet? We should never hesitate to use the lash when necessary, but there are moments when the lure is even more effective."
Thane had no idea what that meant, and he didn't care either. All he knew was that he could no longer imagine any fate more glorious than becoming an officer in the Imperial fleet. From the grin on Sienna's face, he could tell she felt the same way. She whispered, "We'll have to study hard. And practice flying." His answer made her face fall.
"I don't have any ships to practice with, and our only simulator is old."
Of course they didn't have good simulators in the valleys, and probably only one person in 50 of the Valley Kindred owned their own craft. Thane felt bad for a moment, until inspiration struck.
"You can come practice with me then."
Sinus' face lit up.
"Really? Sure."
Lots of maneuvers could only be performed with a co-pilot. He would need a partner if he wanted to learn to fly well enough to get into the Imperial Starfleet someday. Besides, Thane could already tell, in spite of all their differences, he and Sienna Ree were going to be friends.
Chapter 1. 5 years later.
30 minutes remained until flying practice. Hardly even enough time to get to the hangar by now. And Sienna still had to sit here on this stupid bench. No, she thought. It's not stupid. The Nair family's honor has been questioned. They need their friends to stand with them in their hour of trial, even if it means missing flying practice. But I would so much rather be flying. The rough-hewn granite bench stood in front of the small domed house of the Nair family, other kin of the valleys whose lands had bordered the Ree families for generations. In front of the bench lay a long trench filled with sand, which now had several flagpoles stuck in it, each flag representing a family that had declared its loyalty to the Nairs during this dark time. The tradition was an ancient one, going back to the first days of settlement on Jellucan, but it still had meaning. One member of every loyal family would remain with the Nairs constantly until the cloud of suspicion over their honor had been cleared. Most of the Valley Kindred had brought a flag, but not all. Some few thought the father of the household was abusing his power as an imperial communications monitor, reporting meetings and messages that were private. However, Sienna's parents had declared that no one should even want to hide important information from the Empire, and those who accused the Nairs were the ones without honor. Still, it was the Nairs who had been accused, and they had to bear the weight. The family's genes passed down blonde hair and milk-white skin. Even so, their faces had gone paler, to the point where they all looked sick. If the formal complaint to the Imperial Governor was upheld, and a new monitor was named, the Nairs would share in that disgrace forever, a difficult threat to endure. So friends needed to stay close to them to provide what comfort they could. "I'd want someone to do that for me, if I were falsely accused," Sienna thought. "But the Nairs would be even more comforted if my parents were here, like they said they would be a whole hour ago." Her eyes searched the skies, as if she would already see the old V-171 soaring overhead. From the bench, Sienna could see farther down into the valley, all the way to the distant silvery gleam of water several thousand meters below. Surrounding her were countless snowy peaks, like white claws scratching at a stone-colored sky. Her dark blue cloak was heavy enough not to be disturbed by the winds, and it also disguised the fact that instead of her traditional dress, she wore the oversized flight suit she'd managed to buy at a surplus store earlier that year. Then she heard the distant whir of a ridge crawler, the mountain-ready hovercraft Empire-backed merchants had introduced to the world 5 years before. Already, Sienna could hardly remember how they'd managed without them. She still loved the old Munyak, but he was even slower these days. When the ridge crawler rounded the bend, she wanted to leap up in delight. Finally! But she remained on the bench, face solemn, until her father had stepped out and walked over to her. He was alone. "Where's Mama?" Sienna said as she rose to her feet.
"Another late night at the mine." Her father shook his head. "We knew her role as supervisor would require hard work, and I'm proud of her. But I miss her sometimes."
"Me too." And Sienna absolutely meant that. Yet she couldn't keep her eyes off the ridge crawler. If Papa would let her borrow it, she could still get to the hangar in time. Her father saw her haste and pressed his lips together in a thin line that threatened to become a frown.
"Flying again today?"
"Papa, please. How else am I supposed to get into one of the Imperial Academies?"
"You should practice, and often. Nothing would make your mother and me prouder than to see you become an Imperial officer."
Perrin Ree paused. A few birds flew overhead, screeching their usual calls. Sienna watched them fly, because whenever her father brought up this next subject, she found it hard even to look at him. "Sure enough," he continued,
"we only wish you would practice more at the new simulators in Valencia instead of spending all your time with that boy."
"Thane's my friend," she stressed the last word.
"We shouldn't take anything from second waivers. We should rise by our own power, not because of their gifts."
Sometimes Sienna flew into a rage at this point in the fight. But if she did that today, she definitely wouldn't get to fly. So she took a deep breath before she continued. I help Thane as much as he helps me. We work together. Neither of us owes the other anything, and he remembers that as well as I do. Her father sighed. His kind have short memories. But go. Take the ridge crawler. I'll ride the Muniac home. Your mother and I will be back later, and you will have finished your lessons and cleaned the kitchen top to bottom.
Yes, sir.
Her spirits lifted. She'd fly today after all. Become a better pilot than this Kyrell boy, said her father as he straightened his robe and began to walk inside the Nyair home. If there's only one slot for a Jellucani cadet, I want it to be yours. Sienna laughed.
We're both going. The Imperial Starfleet won't be able to do without us.
Even Papa had to smile. Thane wondered if he could manage to jar loose the restraining bolt on the CZ-1 tutor droid. If so, then the droid would let him go even if he hadn't completed his stupid mathematics test.
Your concentration is faltering, said CZ-1. This is not conducive to optimal performance.
Thane pointed to the nearest chrono.
I'm late for flying practice.
You must complete your lessons in order to master the subject. How else will you gain admission to an Imperial Academy? Your parents' fondest hope is that you will follow in Dalvin's footsteps.
Sometimes Thane believed CZ-1 was slyer than a droid ought to be. Nothing made Thane fume like the knowledge that Dalvin had somehow managed to get into one of the academies. One of the lesser ones, but still. Thane suspected his father might have bribed the local recruiter to admit his elder son to bolster the family pride. But Oris Kyrell wouldn't exert himself like that for Thane, who would have to get into the academy on his own. So he thought fast. I won't gain admission to an Imperial Academy if I can't fly well, Thane pointed out. And how can I fly well if I don't practice?
Your family has its own hangar and aircraft. Therefore, you can practice at any time.
With his best smile, Thane said, But we also have you, CZ-1. That means I can take math lessons at any time, too. I can only fly with a partner when Sienna's free, and she's coming today. So doesn't it make sense for me to prioritize flight time? CZ-1 cocked his head, and Thane heard the faint whirring that meant the droid was thinking hard. Very casually, Thane said, You know, when I get back, I really ought to give you a lubrication bath. A nice, long soak. It's been a while, hasn't it? A few more moments of silence followed before CZ-1 said,
Now that you mention it, my couplings have been stiff lately.
With a grin, Thane snapped off the mathematics holo and grabbed his flight jacket. I'll be home before my parents get back from that stupid banquet, okay?
And mathematics tomorrow morning!
CZ-1 called as Thane dashed out the door. His family had a private hangar, but as with most people on Jellucan, their territory ran more vertically than horizontally. Their gold-tiled home stretched almost the entire width of their property, mostly because his parents had insisted that people of their stature needed a home grander than the neighbors. The snobbery annoyed Thane less than the fact that this meant his hangar was 300 meters away, downhill. At least he'd figured out a solution. With a grin, Thane slid on his flight goggles and ran for the far ridge. The handlebars were in position and ready, so all he had to do was grab them tightly, release the brake, and jump. Immediately, he was zooming along the cable that led from his home to his hangar, dangling from the handlebars as he sped down the long ridge of stone. Cold mountain air whipped around him as he looked down into the valley far below. It wasn't as good as flying, but it came close. He reactivated the brake as he slid toward the end post, but only gradually because he liked to have some velocity left at the end. Just before he would have crashed into the post, Thane let go and leaped to the ground, laughing out loud. Then he heard,
You know, someday, you're going to break your face on that thing.
Thane turned to see Sienna standing there next to her family's clunky old ridge crawler. She looked even shorter and skinnier than she was in that oversized flight suit, and her face still appeared younger than her age, with its rounded cheeks and snub nose. Her arms were folded across her chest, and she was trying to look stern, but he could see the smile hiding in her dark brown eyes. He righted himself and clapped his hands together to clean his gloves.
"You're just jealous because I never let you do it."
Sienna stuck her tongue out at him.
"I could do it, you know."
Of course she could. Thane never doubted that. But the line started at his house, and his parents hated her even more than her parents hated him. The few times they'd met, his family had treated Sienna so rudely that it made Thane almost sick with shame. Sienna was no more eager to encounter the Kyrells again than they were to see her. However, the two of them always pretended there was no reason they shouldn't spend time together. It was easier than talking about how their families wanted them apart.
"Here I was, worried about running late," Sienna continued, "and I beat you here."
"Trigonometry," Thane grimaced, an expression Sienna matched.
"Come on, let's get started. Lizard Toad Snake for pilot?"
They each silently counted to three and held out their hands. Thane had gone for Snake, but Sienna chose Lizard, and Lizard ate Snake. She beamed, and he gestured toward the V-171's hatch.
"Pilots first."
He didn't actually mind being co-pilot slash gunner. Cadets had to be expert at flying in both positions if they wanted to get into the academy. But sitting backward in the cockpit was never quite as much fun. Technically, the V-171 was Dolvin's. When he'd left for the academy, he'd given strict instructions that nobody was to fly it while he was gone.
Yeah, right.
Thane never passed up an opportunity to fly, or to get a little revenge on his older brother. Dolvin was always ruder about Sienna than anyone else in the Kyrell family. Not long before Dolvin had left for the academy, he'd sneered and said that there was only one reason to pick up some girl from the valleys. And if that was what Thane was after, he ought to get one who had breasts already. Thane had split Dolvin's lip before their parents pulled them apart.
"Hey,"
Sienna said. Thane realized he was just standing on the ladder instead of climbing inside the cockpit.
"Still with me?"
"Yeah." Thane slid into the ship while determinedly not looking at the front of Sienna's flight suit.
"Sorry, let's go."
They slid on their helmets, buckled their harnesses, and lowered the hatch to seal themselves in. By now, the procedure was second nature, something Thane could do without conscious thought. He knew the moment Sienna would start flipping the switches to activate the motor, and even the rhythm of her fingertips as she did it. His own console lit up in response.
"All systems check out. Confirmed, we are ready for takeoff," she said. "Full thrusters, let's grab some sky."
The old V-171 rose from the ground with a shudder, engines glowing blue on either side of them. Then they turned, banked, and soared away. Sienna took them up higher toward the peaks, too cold and hostile for anyone to settle. A handful of mining droids dotted the landscape, gleaming darkly against snow and pale stone, but otherwise the area remained untouched. Thane felt as though he and Sienna had the world to themselves. When they flew near one of the eastern ridge arches, Sienna's voice crackled through his helmet speakers.
"I see some icicles that need to be taught a lesson."
"Got it."
The arch came into focus on his view screen grid. Three icicles hung from the rock like stalactites, most of them about as thick as his arm. Big for an icicle, small for a target. Thane took aim, fired, and sent shattered ice spraying into the air. He grinned as he heard Sienna's victory whoop.
"Think you can find me a couple more targets?"
he said. They never blasted indiscriminately, because a few falling rocks or icicles at this altitude could turn into an avalanche down at habitation levels. But he and Sienna had learned every place safe to shoot where ice could possibly hide.
"Oh yeah,"
she replied.
"Hang on."
Thane knew exactly how she'd loop the ship downward, even without guessing their exact destination, he could sense, just from the slightest shift of their wings, which way she would move next. He and Sienna had flown as a team every chance they'd had for the past 5 years. By now, they worked together like two hands of the same pilot. The V-171 dived into Stepson's Gorge, a narrow, craggy pass that challenged ships at every turn. Sienna steered them down deep, no doubt intending to give Thane some practice targeting overhead. As they descended, they swooped past one of the many small waterfalls within the gorge. Despite the freezing chill, the falls still flowed, though more in a trickle than a gush. At that hour of the afternoon, the light caught the water at the perfect angle for a rainbow, and an icy outcropping nearby caught the prismatic light, reflecting it in a dozen directions at once. Every rock and line of snow seemed to glitter. It was one of those perfect moments, all the more spectacular because in an instant it would be gone, never to be seen again. Thane heard Sienna whisper, "Look through my eyes." He'd known she would say that. Maybe it was finally time to find out why. After flying practice, Sienna and Thane went to the fortress. So they'd named it when they were 8 years old and inclined to be dramatic. Really, the space was nothing but a cave, albeit a cave they'd spent several years fixing up to their satisfaction. Every few weeks, one of them would show up with something else to add to their collection. Most of the nicer stuff, the proton fuel heater, the holo games, had been brought by Thane. Cast-offs from his family. Luxuries they had tired of or would never miss. Sienna's offerings were humbler, but she consoled herself by thinking they were more important. The fortress would have been incredibly uncomfortable without the thick blankets and hide rugs she'd brought. Those too were cast-offs, passed on by Valley kindred trying to modernize their dwellings to Imperial standards. But they were warm and soft, the ideal lining for their nest hidden away from the world. Really, the cave was located fewer than 50 meters from the Kyrell family's hangar, but the mouth was tucked above one outcropping and overshadowed by another, making it so secret that Sienna sometimes thought she and Thane might be the first people in the history of Jellucan to walk inside. In short, it was the perfect hangout. Occasionally, each of them went there alone, but mostly they visited the fortress together, talking about everything in the world and dreaming about their future among the stars. "My father said it was 36 senators who walked out," Sienna said. Thane shrugged. He was less interested in politics than Sienna was, and continued lounging on the red rug, staring out at the sunset. "What difference does it make whether it was 20 or 36? Out of hundreds of senators, that's not that many either way. They refuse to cast votes. They're going to be replaced by Imperial appointment. That's a big deal, Thane. It's just some rich old politicians being self-important. That's their idea of fun. How could they betray their oaths, their honor?" Sienna still couldn't fully believe it. "Everybody knows it was the Senate that steered the galaxy into civil war before the Emperor established order again. Why would anyone take the peace we have now for granted?" Thane shrugged. "Probably they're really fighting about something else entirely and just saying it's all about these high ideals. When they realize they don't have any power anymore, they'll come crawling back to the Emperor and forget all about the stuff they were arguing over before. You're really cynical sometimes. I'm right, though. You'll see." Sienna sighed as she lay back on the black Gundark hide, its thick fur as cozy as any bed. From this angle, the sunset blazed magnificently just beyond the far ridge of mountains. The light glowing into the cave turned Thane's hair to true red and added warmth to his pale skin. And something about the way it fell made his face look startlingly older. "He'll be handsome," she thought. Strange though it was to realize that, Sienna felt she was only being objective. It wasn't as if she and Thane were... as if they would ever... well, they wouldn't. If her parents loathed her having a second-wave boy for a friend, how would they react if she ever fell in love with one? And while Thane had never explicitly told her about the way his father treated him, she'd seen the bruises and sensed in his silences the things he hadn't said. Thane's father would do worse than that if he ever thought the two of them were together. Besides, she and Thane, maybe they were too close to each other to fall in love. Sometimes she felt that they were two parts of the same person. "Hey," Thane said quietly, carefully, "can I ask you something that might be, personal?" Had he guessed what she was thinking about? Sianna sat up and hugged her knees to her chest. "You can ask. I don't promise to answer." "Fair enough." He paused again before continuing. "Every once in a while, when we see something really amazing, you whisper, 'Look through my eyes.' Is that a valley thing? What does it mean?" It was personal, but Sianna found she didn't mind Thane's knowing. "Yes, it's one of our customs. A rarer one, though. See, when I was born, I was a twin." "A twin?" Thane sat up straight. Even a second waver would be intrigued. Most planets had myths and legends about twins. "For real? But I thought you were an only child." "I am now. My sister, Wynette, died only a few hours after we were born." "Oh, sorry." "No, it's all right. It's not as if I remember her or anything, but I live my life for both of us." Sianna held up her arm to show off her leather bracelet. "Didn't you ever notice that I never take this off?" "Well, yeah, but I thought you just liked it." Sianna ran her fingertip along the braid. "I wear it as a symbol that I'm still tied to Wynette. All my life, everything I do, everything I see, it's as much of the world as she'll ever have because I share it with her. So when I see something especially beautiful, anything amazing, or sometimes even things that are especially bad, I say those words. My sister looks through my eyes, and I show her the most important moments of my life." Thane leaned back on the rug. "That's really great. I mean it." Sianna nodded. "Sometimes it feels like this huge responsibility, living for Wynette too, but mostly it reminds me to look for what's truly special. Maybe I wouldn't see so much of that if I weren't looking for her." The sun had finally dipped below the horizon. Although light still suffused the lower part of the sky, higher up, the blue had become dark enough to reveal small, twinkling points of light. Sianna whispered, "Someday, once we've made it to the academy, I'm going to show her the stars." Chapter 2. When they were 14. "Come on," Thane said. He sat opposite her, cross-legged, deep within the fortress. "You know this." "Do I? This guy started a war." Sianna's head swam. They'd been reviewing galactic history for 3 hours now. "Okay, the criminal gang that interfered with a legal execution on Geonosis and sparked the Clone Wars was led by... She shut her eyes, winced, and said, "Mace Windu?" Then she opened her eyes again to see Thane grinning at her. "See? You knew it all along." Next to them, the CZ-1 droid clucked approvingly.
"Your grasp of history is excellent, Miss Ree. In my opinion, you should be much more worried about calculus."
Her face fell. Thane glared at CZ-1. "I knew we should have installed the tact upgrade."
"What use is tact if it keeps you from learning?"
CZ-1 shuffled closer, his ancient joints no longer easy to move.
"When you first smuggled me into the Ridge Crawler to bring me here for study sessions, you said I was to ensure that both of you passed the exams. I can't do that by pretending you understand certain subjects when you don't."
Sianna could have groaned in despair. These weren't even the entrance exams for the academy. These would only allow her to qualify for the academy's preparatory courses.
If these tests are kicking my butt, how can I ever pass the real ones?
She tried to make it a joke, but her voice cracked. Thane heard her.
Hey, he said, leaning closer. You're smart enough. You're strong enough. You can fly any single pilot ship in the Imperial Starfleet, and I bet you could even handle a Star Destroyer on your own if they gave you the chance.
She had to laugh.
I doubt it.
I don't doubt it. His words became firmer, more forceful. I don't doubt you. So stop doubting yourself, okay? We can do this.
Sienna repeated the words to make herself believe them.
We can.
When they were 15...
Kyrell!
The ENA endurance and agility coach stood over Thane, who lay panting on the ground.
Get it in gear or get out for good!
Every month, in the preparatory track, they had to run a different obstacle course. Gradually, the courses became more difficult, even dangerous. If would-be cadets broke a limb or gained a scar, it was just proof that they weren't fit to be there in the first place. Not finishing the course, it didn't get you automatically expelled, but it put you really high on the list of kids who would be first to go. But his back and shoulders hurt so much.
Hey!
Sienna kneeled beside him.
Come on, get up!
Thane shook his head. His muscles quivered with exhaustion. Beneath his loose black ENA gear, bruises and cuts burned with each movement he made. He'd had less than 2 hours sleep. Every muscle ached. His bones felt heavier than carbonite.
I can't.
Like hell you can't. He lifted his head from the rubbery red surface of the ENA room to see her kneeling over him. The first moment their eyes met, Thane realized he wouldn't be able to hide the truth from her.
Last night, my dad...
Normally, Oris Kyrell lectured his sons. Often he caned them, but only for a few strokes. However, the night before, his wrath had exploded as never before. Thane had not realized he needed to fight back until he was too injured to do so. His father's punches and kicks had not stopped until Thane was on the floor bleeding. Neither of his parents had helped him up afterward, nor had they acknowledged his injuries in the morning. Apparently, they were determined to pretend the incident had never happened. Bruised and aching, Thane had to bear the truth alone, at least until Sienna's eyes widened in understanding.
You can still do it, she whispered. You got this far, right?
I'll try,
he said between deep gulping breaths.
But you have to get back on the course. You're losing time.
I'm ranked number one in ENA, remember? I can afford to lose a few minutes. And I swear to you right now, Thane Kyrell, if I have to pick you up and carry you to the end of the course, I will.
I appreciate the offer, but I don't think that counts.
More students ran past them, vaulting over the next high barrier with only a few grunts and groans from those who had touched the sharp edges. These were the slowest kids, or close to it. Sienna would finish last, and Thane didn't expect to finish at all. He rolled over to look her in the face so maybe she'd see how deeply he meant it.
Go!
Sienna only leaned closer.
Thane, don't let your father win.
Hatred of his father did what hope couldn't. Fueled by pure spite, Thane struggled to his knees, then to his feet. Though he staggered at first, he managed to catch himself.
Ready to run?
Sienna began bouncing on her heels, eager to get moving.
Yeah.
Thane took a deep breath.
I'm ready.
Somehow, he hurled himself over the barrier. Although Thane made it to the end in last place, he made it. Afterward, in the privacy of the gear room, he sat on the bench, carefully stripped off his shirt and let Sienna see the worst of it. The shame made his face burn. Even though he knew he wasn't the one who ought to be ashamed, here he was, showing Sienna how he'd let himself get beaten until the skin of his back split open. If she pitied him or said she felt sorry for him, Thane thought he might have had to walk out. But Sienna said nothing. Silently, she opened the first aid kit and set to work applying curative skin sealant,
closing each cut one at a time until Thane felt whole again. When they were 16, only a handful of kids from the entire planet of Jellucan made it into one of the Imperial Academies.